Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, in my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and every god I do.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Dave Bitts. Dave is the president of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations. Dave, can you tell us what that association is?
Yes. Let me say first that I am also an active commercial fisherman. I fish crabs out of Eureka and go to San Francisco, Fort Bragg, to fish for salmon, and I get off on doing those things. I'm not particularly good at them, but I enjoy doing them a lot, and I've managed to support my habit. So PCFFA, which we say whenever we can, represents the marketing associations in the fishing ports of California. So Humboldt Fishermen's Marketing Association is a member of PCFFA, and so is the association Half Moon Bay, Fort Bragg, Bodega Bay, et cetera. We have, I think, 14 members in California.
Is it also Oregon and Washington?
We have associate members in Oregon and Washington. We don't have actual, like, voting member ports of our association in those states.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what is your organization working on? What sorts of projects?
We are the powerful commercial fishing lobby in California in the person of Zeke Grader, our executive director. And the main thing we've worked on for the almost 40 years of our existence has been salmon habitat issues. We have worked to make sure that forest practices improve so that they are not harmful to fish. And we try to see that enough water is left in the river in good enough condition that fish can use it when they come back from the ocean or use it to find their way to the ocean. We've had mixed success, I would say. The condition of the Sacramento Delta is horrible in spite of our efforts, but that's been the main focus of our efforts. I think we figured out a long time ago that it doesn't make any sense to fish ourselves out of a job. And so we have done whatever we could to ensure that what we do is sustainable. And to me, the simple way to determine sustainability is if you keep doing it the way you are, is there any reason implicit in that why you couldn't keep doing it forever? Mm-hmm. Can we keep doing what we are for the foreseeable future? And there are three components of it. One is the rate of catch. Clearly, you can't catch them faster than they can replace themselves because that's not sustainable. You run out of fish. Two, you can't be killing a lot of other critters that are not your target. That's bycatch. And you have to do what you can to reduce your bycatch so that you're not harming what may be somebody else's target stock or critical to the habitat or whatever. And the third is habitat damage. We don't want to degrade the habitat, the marine habitat in which we find the fish. And so we have to find ways of doing it that don't leave the habitat in worse shape than we found it. To me, those are the three legs of sustainable fishing practices. There are some who have more stringent definitions, but that's mine.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think sometimes it helps to make it simple so that people can understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it seems like one of the aspects of that is the Klamath River has been habitat and,
yes,
and trying to deal with the dams that are up there. What are your thoughts about that?
PCFFA has been a party to the Klamath settlement talks from the beginning, and actually Glenn Spain, our Northwest director, has invested about half his life for the last 6 years in the success of those talks. We are very excited that we have an agreement that's moving forward. We think it's a long ways from a perfect agreement, but the two big things in my mind that would be accomplished is, one, four dams would come out that do no good for salmon and do a lot of bad for water quality. And two, there would be, under the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement, about an additional 100,000 acre feet of water for fish in most years. And that amounts to, if I've done my math right, that amounts to about 250 cubic feet per second for about 6 months out of the year, which is a substantial addition to recent flow regimes. And you combine those things, and there's a lot more that needs to be done that the agreement does not cover, but it's a contract. It does not supersede any existing law. All existing laws remain in effect, the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Water Act, et cetera. And all the parties to the agreement know that. We have the dam owner, the federal government, both state governments, and a lot of NGO organizations, three tribes, and ocean fishermen all behind this agreement. It seems the likeliest path to accomplish something that would be very good for salmonids in the Klamath River. Mm-hmm. And we're just planning to work on it for the next 10 years and hope it all happens.
And are the farmers also behind these?
The farmers who get water from the Klamath Project, mm-hmm. which is Klamath Water Users Association, probably some others, are definitely way behind it. It's an agreement. Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement is basically a contract with them. We're going to operate things this way in the future. It's going to be better for them because they have an increased security of water deliveries over what they've had in the past, even though it's going to be less, especially in drier years, than they've had in the past. And it's better for fish because the dams are gone and there's going to be better flows.
When we talk about sustainability, I think one of the things that people have a difficult time with is kind of going into the grocery store and trying to figure it out for themselves. Some grocery stores are very good at labeling things, mm-hmm. but even then it can be somewhat confusing. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what people should be looking for?
I would say people should be looking for wild-caught fish. And if it's a good market, you should be able to ask them how and where the fish was caught. They may have to tell you where it was caught. If it was caught in the United States, then it was caught pursuant to the federal and state laws that we have that are intended to ensure sustainability. If it's imported, then that's a lot iffier. For example, our shrimp fishermen in the Gulf of Mexico have turtle excluder devices, and it's a bycatch issue. Their gear was killing sea turtles, and nobody benefits from that. So they have these devices that reduce the amount of sea turtles they kill, but imported shrimp probably isn't caught using those devices, and in fact, it's probably farmed. It probably was produced at the expense of a bunch of coastal mangrove swamps, and I wish I had the strength of character not to buy it.
Uh-huh.
In the case of farmed salmon, it's a lot easier.
Uh-huh.
For one thing, they're required by law to say color added at the point of sale, which is a turnoff for a lot of people. And for another thing, people that have tried both, I've heard, to me, a lot of people say, uh-huh. Oh, wild fish is just so much better. I hope I never have to eat that farm stuff again. And our fish is caught under the most sustainable practices that we can promote.
Uh-huh.
So we use barbless hooks off Pacific coast to catch salmon. We are managed to be sure enough fish are left for the river to spawn mm-hmm. and produce the next generation. We're managed by time and area to avoid the rarer stocks of fish, such as winter and spring run fish, and target the abundant ones. We're not perfect, but we're doing everything we can to prosecute the fishery in a sustainable way.
And tell me about barbless hooks. Why is that important?
That is more of a pure self-interest thing. The barb, if you catch a sublegal fish that's not big enough, that's 26 inches or 27 inches minimum size, and you have a barb in the hook, when you remove that hook, you're likely to tear the fish's gills, and then he's likely to bleed to death. Or even if you don't tear the gill, you're going to do more damage to the fish's jaw or nose or whatever. The barbless hook comes out quite easily with minimal damage to the fish, and he's going to swim away in much better shape. Mm-hmm. And the first, I never used them until they were required almost 30 years ago. And the first day I released short fish, I was just kicking myself for not having switched earlier because I could see such a difference in the vigor of the fish swimming away after I release them. So barbless hooks. But if the leader goes slack, that fish gets off.
Ah.
That's the downside. However, if he gets off of my hook today, he's probably going to bite yours tomorrow and vice versa.
We'll be seeing him again.
Yes. He'll come around for another chance.
Well, this is Jennifer Bell, and I've had the pleasure of talking with Dave Bitts, the president of the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, and we're going to come back next week and talk some more. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you apple, plum, and apricot, I do, eh? Come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.